There we are. That's the Irish anthem. You know, just in memory, we were talking about Des Dalton a while ago. We're going to be talking a little bit with Zafar Bengash, but I want to announce that Ken Stone, Syria Solidarity Movement, is going to be speaking on the 14th at Betsatoon. By the way, go to the Betsatoon site so you get all the details. It's 612 Markham at 7 p.m. And Ken visited Syria and has written a book pamphlet, Defiant Syria, and it's produced by the Syrian Solidarity Movement. Ken was at Palmyra, and listeners might remember we celebrated the victory of the Syrian army over the terrorists at Palmyra, and it a World Heritage Site. We like to say, and certainly here at the Taylor Report, it's significant when states are able to crush foreign-sponsored terrorists who go out of their way to commit heinous crimes. And it's very important that there be international solidarity with the people of Syria in their struggle. And so it's important to attend and hear Ken Stone's talk at Betsatoon. And that's on the 14th at 7 p.m. But I would advise you to go to the Betsatoon site to get the information exactly right. But we're joined now by Zafar Bengash. You're there, Zafar.
Hello, Phil. Yes, I am.
Hey, thank you very much, Zafar. There was, we've been anxious to talk to you because you are an authority on a region which changes overnight.
Yes, of course. And thank you very much. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
And let's start with the more sort of this personality, Mr. Adoyan. I'm reading today, and a matter of fact, I saw it in Crescent, -online.net, that Erdogan seems to be, one, he's a little bit unstable, but the other thing is that the world around him is not exactly stable, which would make his instability more interesting. But there's talk of his trying to alter the political system to make a kind of into what they call a presidential system.
Yes.
And now, why would he be doing it? What is his – why is he so desperate to have power? What is it he's trying to accomplish?
Essentially, he's one of those persons who has these megalomaniac ambitions. He thinks that he is indispensable to Turkey. He has these visions of reviving the Ottoman Empire and becoming a modern-day sultan or the king. Although he does have popular support in the country, but the fact that he has these visions of grandeur, I mean, one of the ways that one can measure it in is that he had built a palace in Ankara, which has 1,000 rooms or more in it. And obviously, you can imagine from that it cost $1 billion.
Yes.
He wants those kinds of.
He's building the throne before the country.
That is correct. Yes. Yes. And in fact, at the present time, Turkey is going through a difficult period because its economy is in difficulty. The attack at Istanbul airport further undermined the tourism industry. In fact, the tourism industry, which is a major source of income for Turkey, has declined considerably because of the instability in Turkey, largely as a result of the policies that Erdogan has pursued vis-a-vis Syria and other neighbors. And so tourists have had to flee. Mm-hmm. Since 2014, there have been a number of bomb explosions. As I mentioned, the latest one was at Istanbul airport that killed something like 40, 50 people or perhaps more. Mm-hmm. And so that is a very, very sort of sensitive area because almost all tourists to Turkey enter through Istanbul, and so the tourism industry has taken a very, very hard hit. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, the instability that Erdogan was creating for Bashar al-Assad in Syria has actually come to haunt him inside Turkey itself.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Zafer Bengash, crescent-online.net. Now, he's sort of apologized to the Russians for shooting down their plane, but many people are wondering, well, okay, that's sort of a step that might help reduce tensions. But the issue really between himself and Syria and Russia as an ally of Syria is his permitting, I shouldn't say permitting, encouraging and sending terrorist fighters across his border. Is there any indication he might stop?
Well, he joined the American campaign in the sense that he said, okay, now we're going to support only quote-unquote moderate rebels. Mm-hmm. We know that there is no such animal as a moderate rebel.
Yeah. By the way, he's not actually qualified as a moderate to know a moderate if he saw one, is he?
Exactly.
Moderate? We just described, he doesn't seem very moderate.
That's correct. So basically what this has done is, I mean, he's realized that this whole Syria policy has turned into a fiasco. It's not getting anywhere. Bashar al-Assad is not on the verge of being overthrown. The terrorists that he and his army and intelligence agency have been supporting have not made, a great deal of progress. In fact, all the news coming out of Syria as well as Iraq is that the terrorists are on the defensive. They have mm-hmm. lost considerable territory around Aleppo as well as Manbij, which is a Kurdish town. And then the Syrian army is making progress towards Raqqa, which is the capital of the terrorist mm-hmm. groups. They're about something like 25 kilometers outside Raqqa, the Syrian army. And the Kurdish groups that have surrounded Manbij, another city which is west of Raqqa and close to the Turkish border, again, that has exerted tremendous pressure on these terrorist groups because now they can neither get weapons from being smuggled through Turkey, nor can they get these terrorists being smuggled from there. Mm-hmm. So it is increasing pressure on the terrorist groups inside Syria. And so the policy that Erdogan was pursuing, that he could continue to supply the terrorists endlessly, is appears on the verge of being stopped mm-hmm. completely. So if those terrorists are completely surrounded in Raqqa as well as Manbij, then that means that that would be a major blow to the policy that Erdogan and his allies in Saudi Arabia and Qatar, etc., mm-hmm. together with the Americans and other NATO countries have been pursuing, is going to be brought to an end. Mm-hmm. And so now Erdogan is trying to recoup some of the losses. And in fact, he took two steps. The first was that he apologized to the Russians, although the Russians are not particularly impressed by that apology.
So, yes.
Because they see that this is just a hypocritical game that he's playing.
Well, you know the proverb, I hear what you say, but I see what you do.
Exactly. So, and the second thing is that he's also, made up with the Israelis. In mm-hmm. fact, he's sort of accepted a deal that Israel had offered, that Israel would pay $20 million in compensation for the 9 members of the Mavi Marmara that were attacked by Israeli commandos in international waters on May the 31st of 2010. That boat was sailing towards the Gaza Strip, carrying provisions like food and clothing for children and medicines. There were absolutely no weapons or anything like that, and yet the Israeli commandos violated international law. They attacked the boat in international waters.
That was an amazing episode.
Absolutely.
We were all stunned when that
happened. Exactly. And they murdered nine of those passengers, and scores of others were badly wounded. And, of course, that led to Erdogan breaking off diplomatic relations with Israel. But now, this was announced last week that, or a couple of weeks ago, that Erdogan was restoring relations with them and that he had accepted $20 million in compensation from Israel for the victims' families. Mm-hmm. Although the passengers on the Mavi Marmara and those that lost their loved ones are completely livid by this deal that Erdogan has struck, because they said that we have not been consulted. We did not want money. We wanted the Israeli leaders and the Israeli military personnel that were involved in these crimes and giving the orders that they should be prosecuted as war criminals. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there is plenty of evidence to convict them as war criminals. But mm-hmm. because of Erdogan's own vulnerability at home and the failure of his policies, then he's trying to sort of mend fences with the Israelis, hoping that that would save him from further humiliation and further weakening of his grip on power.
Yeah. Now, by the way, inevitably, he every time he takes one of these steps, he does have a sort of unravels a little bit, doesn't he, in his power? And I just want to ask, in relation to that, because this came up in an earlier interview with Murray Dobbin about NATO and Canada's sort of going along automatically, there is a level at which NATO, for example, it's your friend, but it's also penetrates your military. Turkey's part of NATO. I wonder how much that military actually listens to him.
In Turkey, obviously, there is a very, very uneasy relationship between the civilian leadership and the military. At the present time, Erdogan has got his own people in the top positions in the military, so he's relatively okay from that angle. Although we should not discount the possibility that there could be a coup against him, because the Turkish military is a very powerful institution. It has very, as you mentioned, it's a NATO member. It has very close links with them. Also, the Turkish military has very close links with the Israeli military. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, there is...
They live their own private life.
Exactly. And unfortunately, the militaries in most Muslim countries are like that, that they are above the law. They operate according to their own whims and wishes, and they don't really care much for the civilian leadership or whatever policies they may formulate. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that we can discount that Erdogan has been able to subdue the military completely. Mm-hmm. And there could be a possibility, if things go terribly wrong inside Turkey, as they are heading in that direction, mm-hmm. because the economy is not doing too well. It's been further undermined by the tourism industry taking a big hit. Mm-hmm. His policy vis-a-vis Syria has unraveled. He has taken on the Kurdish groups, unnecessarily antagonized them and launched attacks against them. That's a very, very foolish policy. But that was purely because he wanted to gain points and sort of arouse Turkish nationalism to win the last election in November. And so these are some of the aspects that are likely to come to the fore if, let's say, the situation in Turkey continues to deteriorate, particularly on the security front as well as on the economic front.
Yeah. Thank you. We're speaking to Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. And Zafar, you've touched on something at Crescent that, again, this is shocking, but I wonder if it's also a sign of the decline, perhaps, or problems for the Saudi regime. They have reached out to connect themselves to have a meeting in Paris with the outfit called the MKO.
That's correct, yes.
Who were Saddam's old friends, that Saddam and the United States were nurturing these people to attack Iran.
Yes, exactly.
The Saudis are showing up publicly alongside them?
Absolutely. Like, you know,
what is that?
The Saudis are getting so desperate that they realize that their terrorists, the terrorists that they have unleashed in Syria as well as in Iraq, are being gradually degraded. In fact, in Iraq, as you know, the city of Fallujah has been liberated from the terrorist clutches. Now the Iraqi army is heading towards Mosul. So on that front, the Saudis have had a complete failure. Now they're moving out and sort of striking an alliance with this group, the MKO, which is a well-known terrorist group that were involved in bombings and assassinations and planting bombs and et cetera. And they've killed at least 1,200 leading figures in Iran, members of parliament, ministers, chief justice, prime minister, president, you name it. I mean, they killed all kinds of people. And, of course, the Iranian government had to deal with them firmly.
And they used to be on the terror list.
Exactly.
And then just overnight, the Americans said, no, no, they're not terrorists anymore.
Yeah, because they are our terrorists, so they're not on the
Giuliani, the former presidential candidate, a right-wing thug in America, and John McCain.
Yeah.
They went to Paris meetings, too. I noticed, by the way, the MKO seems to be the boss. They put on very grand shows.
Exactly.
They look like some kind of modern art show.
Exactly.
And people sort of float into the meetings, everyone's sitting with his glass of water and wonderful tables. A ton of money is involved with those people.
Sure. And it was Turki Al-Faisal, the former Saudi intelligence chief, who appeared on the platform with them, and he openly said that he supports this terrorist group's campaign to overthrow the legitimate government in Iran. I mean, he openly said it, and this was and his speech was given extensive coverage in the Saudi media. So it was not anything done surreptitiously. It was done openly and publicly. And here is this, you know, a very senior figure in the Saudi regime calling for the overthrow of a legitimately established government of Iran. And so that means that Turki Al-Faisal is actually consorting with terrorists. He's supporting terrorist groups, and he's calling for the overthrow of a legitimately established government in Iran. Mm-hmm. And so this is an open declaration of war against Iran, and obviously it is going to have implications and repercussions. And I feel, you know, quite deep down that the Saudis are really teetering on the brink. That's why they are clutching at straws. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done these desperate things and these despicably desperate things to be consorting with
the bombing of Yemen.
Exactly. Completely. They have destroyed that poor country, and they're not getting anywhere with their bombing campaign. In fact, you know, they have not been able to dislodge the Houthi militias. They are still completely in control of the capital city. And, you know, there are peace negotiations or talks going on in Kuwait. They started in April, but they haven't got very far. So on all fronts, we see that the Saudis have failed. And so you see their desperate moves in aligning themselves or joining hands with the terrorists, etc.
Well, you summed that up nicely. Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Zafar, thank you very, very much.
It's my great pleasure, Phil. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Taylor Report, CIT and 9.5 FM. Remember, Beth Satoon, Ken Stone, 7 o'clock the 14th, I believe. But check it. I'll make sure you get there at the right place, right time. Beth Satoon. And Charlotte, thank you. And we'll see you next week.
Every Tuesday night at 7, Dementia 13 showcases the glory.